Okay, so we started the recording, and I have with me Linda McElwee, I consider a very important local activist and water carer, and I'm going to ask Linda a few questions about what she's doing, her work, and how she got involved, and she's also a practitioner, so I thought it'd be kind of interesting to get her take on how spiritual practice blends into this. But let's begin, Linda. So maybe you could explain to this audience of folk who you are and how you got involved in caring for water, your activism, and anything that you're doing locally that you think might be of interest.
Okay, well, thanks, Mary, for inviting me to talk with you this morning. I really appreciate I always appreciate the opportunity to kind of share what I do because, my job title for my working job is a watershed coordinator. You could put Navarro Watershed Coordinator in front of that for the Mendocino County Resource Conservation District, it's an RCD. And the RCDs are they're a local public agency, kind of a special district of the state. So we work with landowners on a voluntary basis to implement and care for and help steward the lands of the county related to forest, water, and soils. I work in the Navarro. I've been working here and living here since 2000. So in terms of the local community, I'm still relatively a newcomer, but I came in and there had been a restoration plan, a Navarro watershed restoration plan that came out in 1998. So in terms of timing, I just came in right as that plan was getting rolled out in the early 2000s, and I just jumped in wholeheartedly, you could say. So I think this is from the community that you're presenting, and this is related to. I think this just a little bit more background is that before moving here in 2000, I had been at San Francisco Zen Center for about 4.5 years, and just at the very couple years before moving here, we had been at Tassajara Zen Mountain Center, and so we spent 4.5 years. Practicing, facing the wall. I was in my 30s and contemplating the things that are most important in the world, what my place is in it, and how with this one precious life, maybe I could maybe where I fit in. And the reason why this is related just because it's a very small thing that as we were moving out of Zen Center, we're moving up here to the Anderson Valley. Literally, we were driving out of Carmel Valley, and I passed a sign that had volunteering for some creek work, creek signage. They were looking for volunteers. There was like for a volunteer work day in the creeks. And I just looked, I saw that sign, and I said, that's what I want to do. And so, it turns out that's what I really like spending time in creeks. I grew up in creeks and streams, and it was sort of my refuge, if you will. And so I've sort of since been here in a way, just followed that my nose through learning as much as I could. I volunteered for 3.5 years with my mentor, Patty Madigan. Was working here as a watershed coordinator at the time. And then in 2005, I got hired, and I worked part-time for about 6 or 7 years, splitting my time between my background was more, or my other interest has been in agriculture. And so I was doing pollinator landscaping and growing food at Hanley Cellars. And learning about sort of the vineyards, working in support in the vineyards. So I then since kind of carried the soils and water interest And yeah, so now it's been almost 20 years of doing this kind of work, and we have a, kind of built up a whole program here in the Navarro, particularly, that sort of become, has evolved over time, and has developed a lot of interest and in demonstration projects, and you know, there's just, we started with, you know, small projects going one step at a time, and it turns out now there's sort of a whole program, a big program.
Yeah. Well, you know, can you give me an example? Like, you sound like you obviously loved hanging out in creeks and water. Is that still happening in your job? Are you more on the administrative side of things now? Is there an example of, you know, what your typical week or day would be in terms of these projects right now?
Yeah, it's a mix, because we're a grant funded organization, so we write grants, competitive grants, and so we also have developed some kind of strong partnerships with both government agencies and like Natural Resources Conservation Service, and then also some nonprofits, the Nature Conservancy and Trout Unlimited. But so there's definitely grant administration, and there's definitely bureaucracy involved with my job. But I still do get to get out and walk the creeks and talk to landowners and problem solve and try and think through solutions for how we can maintain. Primarily, we have endangered coho salmon habitat here and steelhead habitat in the watershed. It's an undammed natural system. And so I still get to get out on the landscape and walk the creeks. You know, I just got out to a new section of the watershed this week, which is always thrilling, and a part that I haven't been to. And I just love seeing, getting a new perspective in a place that's sort of that I haven't been into before. And so it's a fairly large watershed. It's the largest watershed, contiguous watershed, meaning all of us is contained in Mendocino County. We have larger watersheds like the Russian and the Eel, but they also drain out into our neighboring counties. So Sonoma County for the Russian and Humboldt County for the Eel River. But for Mendocino County, the Navarro is pretty big watershed. So it's, the Navarro plan has been essential in helping to guide us in the work we do. It's now, you know, we've had to update that and update our priorities all the time. So it's I've gotten to get out into these corners of the watershed in my work that is probably one of the best parts of my job, is that I get to get all over into different parts of the watershed.
Wonderful. It sounds like, you know, you've got a nice balance there. Well, although I can imagine the bureaucracy can kind of drive you crazy sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been here 40 years, and I remember, I mean, the program that you're working for that has evolved, did it exist before you came here? I mean, it obviously exists in a fledgling state, but I was always amazed at how much seeming damage was being done here. Mm-hmm. You know, we're an apple, and quite a few apple and pear orchards, and they just all disappeared, and the vineyards appeared, and then it seemed like we had continuous problems with the water, because the vineyards seemed to be taking the water, or the water was diminishing, and it just felt like, wow. And then we have the marijuana farmers, and so I'm curious how long you've been maintaining these obviously pretty amicable relationships or advisory relationships with the agricultural interests here. And has that improved? Have things have improved over the years, even though we are moving into more, you know, these more extreme climate situations?
That's little bit hard to answer. For many years, I think, because I came in after the plan, which was really, a very difficult process to even have a watershed restoration plan. I think the impetus to have a plan was because there was so much change and really harmful legacy land use practices that with the forestry and the vineyards, you know, a lot of vineyard development moving in, and then cannabis, as you're talking about. So, since I came in after a lot of that, there was a certain, for many years, I would say I had the advantage of what I call sort of like maybe a Pollyanna view of things, so that I could just sort of look, maybe it's the glass half full. So look of things where we have so much going for us. It's such a beautiful watershed. We actually do have a lot of things, you know, habitat that's intact. We have these still, even though they've been completely, you know, basically verging on the, you know, the edge of extinction. So we're trying to prevent extinction, but we still have wild runs of coho salmon, which is pretty unique as you get further north, that we have these existing runs of coho and steelhead. Now, again, they're just in the low hundreds, and depending on the year, has been as low as zero. And during this, since 2012, I would say maybe my Pollyanna view really in the past, you know, 10-12 years, and then this most recent drought that we just went through from 2020 to 2022, and maybe it's getting older, who knows, but a little bit harder to hold on to that. I start to see little like cracks in my optimism, you know, where it's like really like, I remember there's been skepticism early on that it was too late for the Navarro, that I would just sort of brush off. And I think now it's going to be unfortunate. And what we've been trying to do is trying to help really do something proactively with what we have. There's been changes in the regulations for forestry practices. There's been, now that cannabis is regulated, I think we're seeing just the beginnings of that benefit, because that's actually is having a big impact, I think, ultimately. It's been the Wild West out here, and everybody was taking water in all directions, right? So, but I also, my view is the way I can keep constructive relationships is what I like, or productive, or, you know, cooperative relationships, is that I think we're all part of the problem. You know, it's just, there's no getting around it. Like, we're all, like, to point fingers isn't necessarily helpful for me. And I think that we're all part of the problem, and we all have, well, I'd like to think, some responsibility, or, you know, we can be part of the solution. And so that's sort of been my approach with people that, and industry groups. And I see that there's the people also, there's two things that I notice about our community is, one, the people that live here love this place. Everybody loves this place, no matter who they are. Now, there are some risk now. I guess I have to give some caveats. I think there's some risk with some maybe corporate vineyards that don't have connection to place here. That's a risk. But they're also they're pretty heavily regulated, and they're going to become more and more so. So there's a part of it that we can do proactively as a community. And then there's just things that, even though it's bureaucratic and we don't necessarily, it would be better if we were able to do it more on ourselves. There's things happening at the state level and water and regulation that is going to have to take care of some of the rest of it. And that's unfortunate, you know, but that's coming. It's just since the drought years, we've been under this new normal since 2012. Literally, it's been like, you know, I remember farming and gardening before those years and going, wow, is this normal here? Because we live in a variable climate under an extreme, you know, more increasingly extreme climate events. And so it's a very challenging place to farm and garden. I think it can be, depending. And so we live in a variable climate with climate change. So it's really, you got to be on your toes, right? A lot of biodiversity is important. And, you know, and also I would just say that I think every landowner I would go out to talk to, they will say, I am doing everything. I am super conservative with our water. They don't necessarily really know how much water they use, but they say, I'm super conservative. I really take care of this. You know, it's so we're really careful. And then I say, well, what else is there? What else is there? There might be something that, you know, we could do that could, you know, we can always improve. And then through the process, it turns out they have no idea how much water they're actually using. It's oftentimes much, much more than they ever thought, and surprisingly so. And so it's just an interesting thing that I notice about us as people.
Yeah, I mean, that's so interesting. And it means that indicates to me how many skills that you have had to evolve, or you have naturally, Linda, to cope with all the, you know, the conversations and the sense of the bigger picture, that, you know, you don't give up, you just keep going. Yeah. And one thing I would ask you about is, I suppose it's possibly related, is where you find inspiration. And you've mentioned a few things, but I wondered if it was connected to the climate resiliency, you know, the big groups that you've had, which is obviously a mission. But I've been very impressed with how you guys have got a whole group of totally different people into one room to talk about climate. I mean, have you found those nourishing, you know, or do they give you hope in the long run? And are there other aspects of your work that are, you know, inspirational or just keep you going?
The climate resiliency meetings have been hugely inspiring for me and really give me a lot of hope. As you say, to see 120 people, you know, we're a small community, so having 120 people on a nice, beautiful October day come and spend the whole day looking and talking climate resiliency related to forests, water, and soils, and having conversations on how we can problem solve together. And it is like a balm for my soul. And it's that engagement. I would say, literally, Mary, I think every time, almost every time, I mean, there's definitely been a few as we get more, like, there's definitely some outliers, but not that many, but almost every situation when we go out and talk to a landowner and see what's possible with conserving the water resources or, you know, walking in the creek to do surveys, you know, asking for permission to do surveys to see, you know, salmonid surveys. They all say yes. And that also gives me just tremendous, you know, we just have this amazing, amazing community. The other thing that I do, and even after a big event like that, I like to go walk in the creeks. I like to go visit some of our projects. And I like to go look to see what, if it's in the winter, if we can see any reds or the scouring of the egg nests and the, or if I'm lucky enough to see some fish, or in the summer, go and see, you know, to the places where I know there may be, you know, young of the year or juvenile salmonids, or, you know, after this time of, since there's now it's a number of years. And a lot of projects, some of them are smaller, but some of them are, you know, they've started to add up. And I do have this just recently, I would say maybe since 2019 or, you know, I don't know, I can drive through the valley and I see some of them need to get revisited. You know, they're not all none of them are perfectly functioning, and there, some of them are more run down. But I see and feel all of the projects that we've worked on. There's a physical manifestation of that that I can I know where those projects are, and I can go and see them and see how they're doing, and that gives me a really great sense of satisfaction. And when I'm down or you know, feeling a little overwhelmed by it all, it always helps just to go get in the creek. Usually.
Well, you know, that might bring me to my last question, which is did your love of the natural world bring you to Zen, or did Zen bring you to the natural world, and are they completely intermingled in some way, in, you know, in the sense of your spiritual practice or what sustains you spiritually?
That's a good question. Alongside for me, I don't know which is like, brought me to which, but alongside the Zen practice is I have a longer Tai Chi and Qigong practice, and it's easier for me to answer in some ways. I think Zen helped to deepen it. The Zen practice helped me to deepen it, but a commitment internally to the natural world. But through Tai Chi and Qigong is, because it's based on natural principles and the movements and the organs are associated with the seasons of the year. And there's, as that practice I feel like what has connected me almost in some ways more to the turning of the seasons into the natural world. And I think I was I've always been drawn to I've always been drawn to nature as a place of refuge and the restoration. And, you know, it's been my go-to place to restore, whatever, I'm feeling. I mean, it's a place to go, not just when I'm feeling, you know, if there were times in my life of loneliness or sadness or despair, but also just where there's connection and joy. And similar to Tai Chi, there's so many metaphors, I would say, with Tai Chi and creeks and water. And one of the things is we would, when I was teaching, I haven't been teaching since COVID, but since when I was teaching, every time we would enter into doing the form, it was like you never step in the same river again, right? It's twice. And it's the same with the Tai Chi form. It's the same form, but it's never the same. And so, and we would step into the river in a sense of that flow, but it's always a new river, and there is no end to the learning and to the depth and the wonder, because it's limitless.
Well, what a wonderful way to end, Linda. And Linda has quite a tremendous reputation as a Tai Chi Qigong teacher in the area too. So, and I didn't know about the Zen, actually. So, or at least I knew maybe just a little that you were a hardcore meditator. Well, thank you so much.
If I may, just one more thing that what really helps me, and then I think this is important to say, because when the work and the challenges become overwhelming, my practice, whether it's the Zen or the Tai Chi, it helped to ground me in a larger, much larger context, and not take any of it too seriously. And or myself too seriously, or the work too seriously, and that there's to just give me some space and groundlessness to just separate out a little bit and reorient perspective. And I cherish that so much, because otherwise I would be hooked probably all the time. Yeah. Anyway, thank you. I just wanted to add that one thing because it is a place that, you know, my practice does help me to find ground and reorient when I really need it.
Wow. That's so lovely. Thank you. I'm going to stop the recording now, so just hold on a second. But thank you so much for that.